Since the earlier lectures, your reports have been awaited. I wish to know what there was that you wished to know, especially what reaction you might have given to the three early lectures. And of the questions that have come in, the one which has been the most usual has been about the breathing rate, the breath exercises. While making the Huna prayer action must be considered a fine art, it is really very simple. That is, once one becomes familiar with the method. It would be even more simple if most of us did not make the first approach to the use of the ancient lore with several prayer habits which have to be changed. The worst habit is that of going off half-cocked without first deciding on what we must pray for. Many people have a sudden desire for something and immediately make a gimme-gimme prayer, as I call it, asking God, give me this, give me that. The thoughtful person who is taking plenty of time to get the prayer ready will do well to imagine that the prayer has already been answered. Then try it on, like you would a pair of new shoes. Try it on to see if it is a comfortable situation that you have asked for. See if it's something that you really want. People often set out to get something, saying to themselves, I want a large house, or they pray for this or that or the other, and become almost obsessed with the desire of something, and finally they get it. And when they do, they find that they wished upon themselves a real white elephant, perhaps a car with payments too high, a house that is entirely too large. I had a friend in Hollywood whose husband was a motion picture man, and he thought they should have a larger house. Their family was growing, so he set about getting a very large house. It strained their finances a little bit, but they managed to get it. And I asked her one evening, I said, how do you like your new house? Oh, she said, it's a very nice house, but she said, I did love the little old one that we had. My mother used to say sometimes, blessed be nothing. And whether this is in the Bible, I do not know, but it certainly is applicable in some cases where possessions become a burden. Another type of bad prayer habit is to describe the thing that is bothering when making a prayer. It is easy to get around this by giving thanks for the answer to the prayer and making that thanks part of the prayer itself. Instead of praying, please cure my arthritic hands that ache all the time, one can pray, dear Father, Mother, I give thanks that my prayer is being accepted and that you have now made my hands well and comfortable and strong and right. This is the safest type of prayer of which I know, for the very act of giving thanks holds firmly in itself the fact the answer is given as a natural condition on the level of the highest self, and that in due time the answer will appear in materialized form on the physical level. The four-breath breathing rhythm of the Ha rite is necessary just as in the way to train the low self and get it started in the art of making the Huna prayer. In a short time, one will have learned the rhythm, and after that, it will not be necessary to think about it. One can settle down and tell the low self to begin accumulating mana and sending it to the high self, then start the breathing rhythm. Once started, the low self will follow it happily, and you can keep your attention fastened on the business of accumulating mana, recalling your precious prayer picture which you have made in advance, and when you feel that enough mana has been sent flowing to the high self, you will repeat three times a sentence which you have memorized describing the desired condition. One can often do better to incorporate in the description the words, I see. As I see myself in a better job with higher pay and good prospects of promotion, or One can say, I give thanks that I have a better job with higher pay and good prospects of promotion. In modern days, thanks to the new thought type of school, we have methods which include the affirmation. We can say, I affirm that I am now normal in health in every part of my body. But there's one school of thought that decrees the answer to prayers. This sounds a little too much as if one were making a prayer and also trying to act the part of the high self. Some years ago, I took a decree using Healer to call on a friend of mine who was paralyzed from foot to neck. The healing took the form of a ritual, with small paper slips being burned in a small brass receptacle like a censer hung on a chain which could swing. Each slip had illness written on it. The lady who was doing the healing ritual intoned loudly her decree that all illness be banished from the surroundings and from the patient. To make certain that the surroundings were covered, she did a sort of a dance step through the house, lighting slips of the paper with a cigar lighter, dropping them into her censer, swinging it. It was very impressive, rather loud, and a bit smoky, but all went well until she was making the third round of the house and came again through the living room where I sat in the company of a small, white, raggedy dog, possibly a toy poodle or a white Scottie, I'm not sure. I was not exactly impressed, but I could bear it. However, the little dog finally ran out of patience and rushed out and nipped the healer sharply on the ankle, whereupon she screamed, dropped the censer, leaving the prayer unfinished. Needly and sadly to say, the patient was not helped. Prayer should be as simple and as direct as possible, with no waving of prayer flags, no burning of incense, or turning of prayer wheels, as is done in some part of the Orient. It should be kept simple. Some have asked questions about just how to do the breathing exercise to accumulate mana. Perhaps it would help if I simulated the ha rite of breathing using the heartbeat count method. That is a favorite, and I have sent out papers to some of my friends and included the paper also in the last output of the Huna Vistas to the Huna Fellows and to the HRAs. To tell about this heartbeat count, but I think we'd better go over it again here and let me not make a direct prayer, but make an imitation. In this method, one matches the heartbeat speed with the count. That is, four heartbeats, four counts, four beats to the intaking of a single breath, of a pause then of a beat, or even two beats, and then the release of the breath to the count of four beats. It's rather clumsy to describe. That makes a cycle of one in and one out, a complete breath. We're going to take four of these complete breaths to make a unit, and you can multiply those until you get 40 if you wish. A beat is counted between cycles, and the breathing goes on while the low self is told to accumulate the mana, make the contact with the high self, and begin sending the mana as the gift of love to strengthen the father and mother for their own work and then for the help we will ask of them. There's no definite time set between the first sending of the mana and the gift of love and the second, but we suppose that the high self will know what to do with the mana as we share it in the flow along the shadowy cord. I like to take four deep complete breaths, then stop and breathe in a normal way for about 20 heartbeats. In this way, one avoids taking on too much oxygen and becoming dizzy from overloading. Let me go through the count in a pretended accumulation, for remember that prayer is a sacred privilege and not to be taken lightly, even in illustrating a lecture. Let me add that if you take on an accumulation of mana and do not stop in the middle of the action and carry the action with you without putting it into a flow to the high self, or into a person whom you may be treating for a healing attempt, there is danger. There may be spirits around who will try to steal the extra mana. So, but we won't go into that here. Make use of the mana as soon as you have accumulated it. Now here we go on the simulation. In, two, three, four. Hold, one. Out, two, three, four. Hold, one. In, two, three. three, four. Hold one, out, two, three, four. Hold one, in, two, three, four. Hold one, out, two, three, four. Hold one, in, two, three, four. Hold one, out, two, three, four. Hold one, in, two, three, four. Hold one, out, two, three, four. Now you can breathe normally for about 20 counts and then repeat it for the next part of the cycle. The heartbeat method is really best for one person to use alone, for the beating rate of hearts may vary from person to person in a group. If several members of the class join to make a prayer or a prayer circle, a leader, however, can be chosen to give the word and the accumulation to begin, and each member can count silently as he or she accumulates. In a circle, if someone is to be treated, that one may be stood or seated in the center of the circle. Members can stand without touching each other while accumulating, and when the leader sees that everyone has finished with the four sets of four counts, he can say, "Join hands," and hands can be joined to close the circle. This will get everyone into tune, so to speak. The one to be treated can then be touched by one hand on the part of each member of the circle to close it. That is, if a circle is broken to allow the person to be taken into it after the mana is accumulated. The mana will flow through the hands and through the group and through the person and into them, and will obey our thoughts. If we wish the mana to accumulate and to pile up in the patient, in the one we are going to heal, it will do so. It will fill the patient full of the vital force. Or the person can be seated in the center of the circle, and when the circle has finished the work of accumulating vital force, the members can approach either one at a time or together slowly and touch the one to be healed. A touch on the head or on the shoulder or on the hand, it doesn't make much difference. Mana has a way of going right through clothing and will enter the person. It follows the dictates of the person who has accumulated it. And each member can silently send the prayer, the picture of the patient as completely made normal. The thanksgiving method, we give thanks that this friend of ours, we give thanks that James Jones is completely normal. If you're giving thanks, you can say, "is completely healed." That seems to do all right as well. The healed picture is a picture of normalcy. There is no set rule for circle healing. You and the classes or groups should experiment and learn by practice what method gets the best result, or what methods. You can try various methods. Remember, the simpler the method, the better. If you're treating one who is ill or weak, take care not to make the process too long and tiring. Several persons can be treated one after another with fresh mana accumulated after each treatment, and the same goes for telepathically treating those at a distance. A distant person should have his or her signature in ink brought into the circle, or a clear photograph. Either one can be passed around the circle to be looked at carefully by members, and this looking at establishes a contact by means of the shadowy threads attached to the signature or the photo, and with the telepathic method, using the ACA threads, the connection or contact can be made. The mana can go out over these connecting threads to the one to be treated as the group finishes the prayer and makes the mental effort to send some of the mana to the patient to strengthen him, or to be used right in his body by the high self for the healing. The prayer also can be made directly to the high self, and the sending of the mana over the ACA threads can be omitted. If the telepathic contact is not made by the group, the high self knows where the person is and can make the contact. The easiest things to heal through this method are natural accidents, such as burns, broken bones, sprains, cuts, and similar injuries. The hardest are illnesses in which the low self of the sufferer may be punishing him for some real or supposed sin of hurt done to others, or for some idea that a sin against God or against church has been committed and that punishment is deserved. Illness of long standing often needs time to elapse, while the high self is frequently supplied with mana to water, symbolically, the seed picture of the prayer and make it grow into the end condition of being healed or of healing. Many people have natural healing ability to some degree. To bring out this ability and strengthen it, a practice is needed, and no better practice can be had than that of using the Huna prayer method on as many people as may be at hand and in need of help. Animals are the very easy ones to help. They have no complexes, no guilt fixations, and love is the key word there. Later on, we must take up the matter of how to go about getting the low selves of those who are in need of healing cleansed. To get the blocks out of them, that is, the blocks that prevent the subconscious from making the contact with the high self, and also prevent the high self from making the full contact with the low self of the person to be healed. When we of the Huna Fellowship get going on a larger scale, we will probably organize with some of the better natural healers brought together, that is, the ones we will find that have a natural healing ability, and a regular course will be outlined for the cleansing of patients before they come to this special group for healing. But all of this is in the future. However, there are possibilities and a great and promising future for it. Practice, all of you. Break ground. See if you have a natural ability. See what you and your friends as a group can do. See if you can develop a healing circle that can do a wonderful service with the people at hand and also with those at a distance. If with the healing going and being successful, as I'm sure it will be, the Huna fellows will grow in number. And always remember to preach the good word, no hurt, no sin, and serve to deserve. Let me speak of something which has bothered some members of the classes. One lady in particular wrote to me, and she said she was not at all pleased at the belief that one must go through the low or subconscious self to reach the God within or high self, the utterly trustworthy father, mother, parental spirit. She felt that she had always been able to talk to or pray to God face to face and directly without any intermediary, and she was distressed at the thought that her low self stood in her way. In fact, she felt that if she had to learn to send her prayers through the low self, she would not do any more studying of the Huna lore. The answer to this is a simple one. No matter how we pray or to whom, the low self will be involved and will try to do its part. That is, unless it is badly injured by guilt and fixations of various kinds. The blessed high self who is watching over one and who has been watching for several past incarnations will be aware of any prayer and the aggregate of the prayers going to it and taking effect in the high level will be sure to bring answers of kind. If, however, there are hopes and fears mingled in the prayers, which automatically make mental pictures of thought forms, the fears get materialized to some extent along with the hopes. It is an indirect and very haphazard method that has been used for centuries, but it is better than nothing. Working with and through the low self is not as bad or as difficult as some imagine, nor can we object too strongly to letting the low self help us and have its part in the work of the three-self team. It digests our food without our being able to sense it, that is, unless we have a stomach ache. It breathes for us. It passes up memories, every whip stitch, so that we can keep thinking in a straight stream or line. It does endless things for the middle self, and it'll do far more if given a proper set of instructions and a little patient help through training. As, for instance, helping it to learn to accumulate mana rapidly and to send up with the mental picture of the desired thing to make the prayer. Among the questions coming in from the classes was one which showed some confusion in the matter of the Ha rite of the secret gospel. The four-breath prayer was mentioned in the lectures. And the question was, will you please send me the Ha prayer? There is no Ha prayer as such. It is a method, not a prayer. There are two distinct parts to the method of making the Ha rite prayer. First, one takes the breaths in a series of four to accumulate mana, and the lower self is instructed to reach out along the shadowy cord to make contact with the high self, then to begin sending it as an extra charge of mana to the high self. The prayer, which has been most carefully constructed ahead of time as a mental picture of the condition wanted, is now recalled to mind, and the low self is asked to send that remembered prayer to the high self like a perfect little ship floating on the river or flow of mana, of vital force, along the Akakord River to the high self. The little ship must have been built just right, and nothing of value must have been left out of it, for it is the ship that we mean when we say, hopefully, when my ship comes in. That is, we of the Huna Fellowship. It is not a ship of words, it is a ship of thought pictures or thought forms, although it may be described in words and in a sentence which you will repeat three times over to be sure that you have it just right each time and that your little ship is built in a staunch and a perfect manner. The code words used by the kahunas have caused quite a little interest. Of course, they are something quite new and quite unusual and are very, very important. They are the very heart of the Huna method and secret when it comes to the deeper understanding. And they are very interesting. They are so pat. They are so short and brief. And they are made up of little root words which in themselves carry several meanings. For instance, if we did not know that the word Ha, H-A, had two meanings, that of breathing heavily or strongly, and that of to breathe in sets of four breaths, we would not understand the word as it should be understood. The kahunas seem to have been afraid that the people coming 2,000 years later, ourselves, if they foresaw us, anyway, they were afraid that the words like the word Ha, for the Ha rite, might get lost. So they made two or three words and put them into the coded parts of the accounts, so that if we lost one word, we would catch the meaning from another. One of these words is the word Aho, A-H-O. It has two meanings. One is that of a thread or cord or rope, or aka thread. The other means to breathe and to be patient. The patient part applies to the taking time to accumulate the mana, and perhaps the necessity of waiting until the prayer can be materialized by the high self, until your little ship comes home on the physical level. The kahuna used another word, which is very similar. Instead of aho, it is aha, A-H-A. This also means a cord, the aka cord to the high self, but it has a secondary meaning that tells us that several people joined in a prayer action can do a better job of it than one alone. The little word means a number of people gathered together as for worship, which is a meaning which fits very nicely into our class of Huma fellows working as a healing circle or unit. And speaking of prayer, the code word for this is Pule, P-U-L-E, Pule. This is the usual, has the usual meaning of to worship, plus to ask a favor of a higher being. But from the roots Pu, P-U, and L-E, we get the meaning of to hold water in the mouth and try to talk at the same time. This would be a very strange meaning indeed if we did not know that the water in this case is a symbol of vital force, mana, which we have accumulated. And the talking is the repetition of the prayer as we describe three times the desired condition which we ask the High Self to bring about. The root word le, L-E, of the word has the meaning of to jump or to fly, and symbolizes the rising of the thought picture, our little ship, of the prayer along the shadowy cord to the High Self. Up goes our little ship under full sail along the stream of mana, like the Flying Dutchman, which is still said to fly as a ghost ship over the seven seas. So the request, give me a prayer, seems to come usually from people who have been brought up in a church in which set prayers have been composed by someone, have been written out into a prayer book, and made ready for almost every occasion or form of need. But in Hulu, we do not have anything of that nature. Everyone or every group must make its own prayer, decide exactly what it wants, and then try to describe that prayer as accurately as possible. Every prayer must be aimed at some special thing or special purpose. Modern languages badly lack neatly descriptive words for various elements in the stages of the Huna prayer. But as such prayers were the very heart and soul of Huna, the old keepers of the secret, as we called them, made code words that were more descriptive. When a prayer was properly made, they had a word for it. It was Wai Pa, or from its two roots, W-A-I, water, and P-A, following that, which means fixed or firm or frozen for the water. The water of mana is made to be fixed or materialized as an actual thing, the thing being the prayer ship being materialized in the hands of the High Self. The outward meaning of the word, of course, is not code. It is simply to desire and to ask in prayer, which we have so slowly dug out in our efforts to uncover and recover the ancient Huna, or secret system of beliefs and practice. To identify the system as one of religion combined with psychology in the first place was a master stroke, and it took a man of the caliber of Dr. William Tufts Brigham, former curator of the Bishop Museum in Hawaii, to make the all-important discovery that this was a combination of genuine psychology mixed with religion. You see, the religions of the world begin with the worship of strong and threatening things in nature, things that man has contended with. The wind is worshipped, the black storms are worshipped, stones even are worshipped, various things, and so the men of science put this down as pure ignorance and superstition. In religion, everything up to the sun was worshipped. The heavens were filled with imaginary gods and goddesses, with the spirits of good and the devils of evil, and man made his gods in his own image. He made them good to be worshipped and appealed to in prayer and with sacrifices, and he made them bad and dangerous, and again they had to be appealed to with sacrifices to let man alone. In between the good and bad gods were imagined, there were imagined to be a host of little godlets. There were goblins and fairies and all kinds of things. And most important of all, there were the spirits of the human dead. A vast ritual of appeasement grew up by degrees to keep the spirits of the dead, from causing everything from illness to misfortune for the living, it cannot be denied that in these late years and with the recovery of the Huna knowledge of the spirits of the man and of their activities, both alive and after death, we have come to know that some of the superstitions were based on actual experiences. No century has been without its mediums or psychics, and these have seen the spirits of the departed, have spoken with them. They know the good ones and the bad ones. They knew the earthbound ones. But truth became mixed with superstition to such an extent that by the advent of modern science, everything good, bad, and indifferent was condemned as superstition. In this condemnation, nothing escaped. Men of science dared not always toss the church into the melting pot of skepticism, but in private, most of them wiped their slates clean of everything that they could not measure with a tape, put under the microscope, or confine in a test tube. Even the human mind went overboard, and man became a machine which was made to act because of chemical reactions in the body and in the brain, but he had no consciousness as a thing apart. The ideal of survival of consciousness, of the personality which is the living man, was laughed to death in the university scoffing rooms, along with witchcraft and spells and even the necessity for religious salvation, a thing which every great religion offered to the faithful in some form or other. Oddly enough, the men of the material sciences remained blind for years to what we now call the science of mind or psychology. From the early days of science, it was plain to see that there must be a science with the usual things to be measured in man, his mind, his physiology, all of those things, but the mind was evasive. Even if the measurements were not in terms of the ruler, microscope, and test tube, how to measure the mind? When at last the subconscious was postulated, the majority of scientists and professors refused even to consider the idea. One famous German professor at Harvard voiced the opinion of the majority of his fellows when he proclaimed with all the authority of his vast learning, "The story of the subconscious can be told in three words: there is none." Psychology as a science is still in its swaddling clothes, in scientific circles at least. Behaviorism still tries to explain consciousness in terms of habit formed by a living machine. The most important parts of the magnificent Huna system remain unrecognized, that is, in science, in psychology in its budding form. The superconscious is something to sneer at along with God, the Holy Spirit, and Mary, the Mother of God. If the never-ending sneer and disclaimer is still not enough for the baby science of psychology, you can imagine what goes on in the sneering rooms when someone inadvertently speaks the forbidden word spirit, or even hints that there may be such a thing as survival of a human spirit. Recently, there was a famous case which was carried through the courts in the state of Arizona. A gentleman had left a very fat legacy to anyone who could prove survival. The courts swarmed with legal aides of people and of groups who sought to prove survival and collect the legacy. There were mediums, people who had died and come back to tell about their experiences on the other side. There were representatives of a surprising number of organizations, but oddly enough, not one of the standard churches of the whole land came forward to try to prove the survival, which was the very basis of their own teachings. The case dragged on and on, and a steady string of applicants appeared and told what they had to offer and how they were going to prove that man survived death as a spirit. The evidence would have convinced almost any jury, I think, if it had been excused from following the archaic letter of the law. But the law was also the kind of scientific thing that demands the use of the ruler, the microscope, and the test tube. In the end, although one organization had not even tried to prove survival, it was given the legacy, because
it was investigating the possibility of survival. The legacy vanished there and then from the competition, and nothing more has been heard of it in the last several months. So, how can we offer acceptable proof of the validity of Huna to those who come to listen to the recital of the things known about Huna? The proof of the pudding was a very long time ago found to be in the eating. If we cannot prove to the men and women of scientific knowledge even the truths thus far discovered in forming the backward science of psychology, how can we hope to prove anything that has to do with psychic science, with spirits and the strange powers of the three selves of the man? If the little we teach in the universities under the heading of psychology remains open to question, as it undeniably does in circles where the professionally learned rule, how can one expect to get even a hearing when it comes to the observations gathered by psychical research over the last 118 years, or gathered to a much greater extent over a period of some thousand or uncounted numbers of years by the men who gave us Huna? Let us offer this instead of proofs of the materialistic kind. Let us offer the things which the kahunas knew and held as sacred secrets. Then, if these things, these seeming facts, will stand the light of reason and are found to answer logically the many unanswered questions which trail religion and psychology, to say nothing of psychic science, let us accept them with what reservations we must. I can assure you that they are the best and most logical answers to be found anywhere. In fact, almost the only set of answers to be found. If we wish to put some system of this kind to work for us, then we come down to the acid test. The kahunas made their secret work. They healed with it, and they called down help in endless ways from the highest part of themselves. Or, if you prefer to say, they called down help from God or some other higher being or higher consciousness, well and good. The important thing is that the kahunas knew of something and how to contact it and asked its help and get it. Reason and practical workability are satisfied. And if we gain a reasonable philosophy and a body of knowledge on the side, so much the better. For those who have no particular need of help in their lives and no special wish to help others through the use of Huna, there's the satisfaction of being able to know how man is put together, how he clicks on this level of physical life and on the next level as a spirit. Intellectual curiosity is, in itself, good. It is perfectly legitimate to want to gather wisdom for wisdom's sake and for that alone. But the world is made a better place if those who accumulate wisdom will use it for the common welfare of others. For some it may be an end in itself to learn from the kahunas of old that man has three selves or three spirits, or to learn the more surprising fact that after death these three spirits may separate and reunite in such a way that we have five kinds of spirits. In passing, may I say that in our years of research in the organization which we have called the Huna Research Associates, we have worked out a method by which these spirits of the dead who come to obsess the living, partly or completely, may be recognized and their state ascertained. This is a part of what is known as psychometric analysis, and one must depend on one's trained low self or subconscious to discover the obsessing spirits and see which of the five categories contains them. For those earnest individuals who search for the meaning of life and desire greatly to know the purpose behind living, Huna offers something which is not only reasonable and in keeping with modern theory of evolution, it also includes a final goal or end to strive for. A goal which is at once shining and wonderful. This is all set forth in the four Gospels with the use of the code of which I so often speak. In Huma, one strives to evolve or learn as fast as possible from experience while getting the guidance of the high self and making as few blunders as possible. No gold streets and heavens are promised to tempt the reluctant to make the great effort to be good. No hellfire is threatened for those who hang back, but for those who have come far enough along the growth paths to sense it, the goal of love will be found a thing of wonder and even magnificence, a thing and a state which dims and outshines all other goals. But I must not let myself begin to tell you of this goal and its nature at the present. That is for a later time. For the moment, let me simply give you my assurance that there is in Huna a splendid purpose behind living, and such a goal as men imagine only in their fondest dream. Salvation as a goal is common to all religions. The salvation offered in Christianity, as I have told you, is to come to know the high self, and those who have come to contact it and to work with it as part of the three selves have obtained or attained to what we call the first salvation. The second salvation comes after a dozen or so incarnations and is the graduation of the middle self into the state of being a high self. The graduation step comes only, however, when one has finally learned to become utterly trustworthy in all things, like the high self, like the blessed Almakua, the parental spirits, whose trademark is to be utterly trustworthy.